In the fabled land of Northern California, nestled in the Valley of Sacramento, two friends begin a journey to enlighten the world about their experience living life as a Xennial. But what is a Xennial, you may ask? If you wish to know, then follow them on their adventures.
Welcome to the Xennial Chronicles. This is James.
This is Mike.
You know something, Mike? It's nice to talk to you, sir.
It is.
It's nice to talk to you.
It is nice to talk.
I gotta tell you, though, I'm feeling a little weird today.
Oh, uh-huh.
I angled myself in a different way. I'm not facing, like, the normal direction I face when we do this. Mm-hmm. Kind of off to the side looking at all of my Star Wars collectibles, wondering what I've done with my life. Anyway, it's nice for people to be listening today. We have a special show today because it's one of those that Mike has the idea of what we're going to talk about. I love these ones because it means that I get to think less and react more, and I kind of like that situation.
Yeah, yeah. So you get
too much thinking on a regular basis.
Exactly. So you get to listen to me stammer on about random stuff and try to keep on track. James, you got to keep me on track, okay? Just in case.
I will do what I can.
Okay, sounds good.
That is a bit of a task.
Yes, completely understood. This is true. All right, so I got a couple of things I wanted to talk about. First, I wanted to open this up because I think I mentioned it near the end of the episode last time. I said something speculatively, and I just kind of want to clear it up because I don't like continuing on with something when I know that I was wrong about it. So week I mentioned something about, we were talking about the passing of Prince Philip, and apparently there were comments.
For anybody that doesn't know, he just had his funeral yesterday, old British dude.
Oh man.
Prince consort, and apparently Americans still care about British royalty, which I just don't get. I'm reiterating that again. But yes, go on.
Yeah, I will
said something about him.
Yeah, absolutely. And I will state that too. Yeah, it shows up on the news, but that's about the most. You'd be like, "Oh, okay, cool. That's it. He's dead." Well, cool. That's where I'm at. But
cool that he's dead?
No, not like nice. I don't mean like nice. It's like, well, look, something else is going to happen too. Just death happens. So
I mean,
whatever.
I mean, it is. I would think that it's maybe a good thing that that part of that genetic line is slowly maybe fading away because that was a genetic line that was so interbred. It's not even funny.
Oh
that,
yeah.
That. Because he came from a European royal family that would be right at home in like the middle of Kentucky. I'm just saying, maybe Arkansas too. Which one is it? Is it Kentucky or Arkansas where you can marry your cousin? I don't remember.
I don't know if you're asking that. Please make that. Yeah, I'm assuming that was rhetorical, right? Because I sure as hell don't know.
No, there's at least one of those states that you can marry your cousin. I'm just not sure which one it is.
Ah, you know, I'm sure that there is. Yeah.
Maybe it's Missouri. I don't know. They're weird down there.
It's a little, yeah, the laws are a little funky down in that area. But anyways, talking about with him is I mentioned something about him. He was known to say some racist shit because basically he was an old guy. And he was an old royal dude. So,
and he was an old British dude. And I mean, come on.
Yeah, that's going to happen.
Any American movie that you watch, at least anything that's set before like the 1900s or whatever.
Yeah.
The British are typically the bad guys, and Americans are seen as so much more understanding when it comes to race relations. They're not. But they're seen much more understanding.
Yeah.
and the British are just seen as these colonizers who just push everybody around and take over everybody's land. And admittedly, they did that. I mean, the sun, there was a point in time where the sun never set on the British Empire. That meant that like they owned enough land from all of their conquering that somewhere it was daytime and that an area of land was owned by the British.
Damn. Like, yeah,
we're here too. Oh, we're also here and we're here. And they basically just subjugated any natives and, forced them to use their language. There are countries that when they speak English, they speak it with a British accent because they learned it from the British.
Yeah.
Because they were forced to. I mean, one of my favorite Jackie Chan movies is basically about British involvement in over in Hong Kong.
And, oh yeah,
back in way back in like the I'm not sure if it's set. I think it's set in the 1800s.
Yeah.
But I'm not talking about it's It's called Legend of Drunken Master in some copies that you get, but then in other copies it's called Legend of Drunken Master 2. It features an amazing fight underneath a train at the very beginning with a hardcore martial arts movie actor. I don't even know the guy's name, but like the dude was a legend when he did this movie. And then it features Jackie Chan doing drunken boxing and some amazing stunts, like one where he literally falls on a giant like container of coals. I'm talking like a 20 foot long by 12 foot wide container of coals. He falls on it and they're real live hot coals. He is really falling on it and has to scoot his body off of it. And then if you watch the end of it, in the end credits, there's people right outside of frame that are dousing him with fire retardant stuff after he does it.
Yeah.
Because he's catching on fire while doing it and burns his hands and crap doing the stunt because that's Jackie Chan. He's just going to do it.
Yeah.
It's a fun movie, mixes humor and really, really good martial arts.
Yeah.
But it's also got a lot of pathos in it. There's some hefty storytelling in it, father and son relations, all that kind of stuff. It's deep movie, great movie. But again, who's the bad guys? It's the British, because that's kind of what they were known for.
Yeah, they kind
of... So, yeah.
I was going to say, they essentially just showed up places and took shit from people.
Basically, yeah. For an old British royal dude to be somewhat racist, really not that much of a leap.
Yeah, this is exactly. And so,
of course, I will add. So I'm not downing on the British too much. I just want to say, old rich white American dude to be racist is also not too much of a leap.
No, it really isn't. It really isn't. Yeah. That's worth saying. That's worth saying just to be fair. Now,
just to say I'm not beating on the British, without reason. I'm being fair.
Yeah,
Americans do it too. So,
definitely.
Anyway,
but so this is actually in regard to a specific comment that was said. We were talking about. I was talking about the interview with Meghan Markle and Oprah Winfrey and Prince Harry, right? Is it Harry or William? Harry. That's the younger one. It's Harry's the younger one. Okay. Yeah. Something was mentioned with them. I guess when Meghan was pregnant, somebody made an off-color comment.
Real quick. Hold on.
Yes.
I just got to add real quick. Harry's the one that has a full head of hair and doesn't look like Prince Charles. Let's just add that in.
Yeah. I don't know.
For some reason has red hair, which doesn't necessarily run in Elizabeth's family. The queen doesn't run in her family, and it didn't run in Diana of Spencer's family either. Did you know his family did run in? You know his family it did run in. I believe it was he was a horse trainer that was there as part of the.
No, damn. Okay, that's a whole another level of. That's a whole another level of tea stealing, bro. God,
I'm just saying. Anyway.
Okay.
Anyway, so yes, the interview, Oprah Winfrey, Meghan Markle.
Yeah, so there was an off-color comment that somebody had made where they mentioned something about the color of the baby, how dark the baby was going to be or whatever. And it was super fucked up. And I speculated, mistakenly so, that it may have been Prince Philip that had said something like that, because I speculated, based on his history of other racist comments, that is not true. It has been fully confirmed that no one from the royal family had actually said something like that. I know nobody really cares, but I don't like sticking with something when it's not correct. Like, when I find out something is untrue, I am one of the first people to admit that I have made a mistake in saying or speculating something, because I don't like that. I don't like keeping that kind of reputation. So I was
you want to be seen as an honest person, and you honestly want to be able to admit when you've said something that's an error or done something that's an error. That's a good thing, bro. That's a good thing.
Yeah,
you're willing to be a critic of yourself, and you're willing to try to make amends and say the right thing. And one of the reasons, by the way, that I do this podcast with you, one of the reasons why you're a friend, one of the reasons why I trust you where I really don't trust people at all, period, because people are horrible, terrible things.
Thank you, man. Because most people, you know what? I appreciate that as a very high compliment.
That's a failing that a lot of people have. A lot of people don't like to admit when they've made mistakes. A lot of people don't want to own up to them and only do so when they are forced to own up to them. And even then, when they are forced to do it, a lot of people still try to deflect it onto other people as other mm-hmm. people's fault, not their own. And I have little time and no respect for people that do that. I firmly believe that the first person that should take responsibility for their actions is themselves. And you shouldn't yes. wait for somebody else to point out where you've made the mistake. If you've recognized the mistake, you need to make better for it.
And exactly.
That's the true strength of character. You're not strong if it doesn't look like you make any mistakes at all because you cover it all up. You're strong when you can admit your mistakes, learn from them, and move on and be a better person.
Exactly. Thank you very much. I appreciate that, sir.
Sorry, I've had that conversation a lot recently.
Ah.
It kind of came out. If it sounds a bit preaching by road, it's because I've been saying it a few times recently.
Ah, I understand entirely. Well, no. Yeah, I get it. I get it. But I appreciate that. So moving on to the actual subject matter that we're talking about. I know we spent a few minutes talking about that, but I actually had a bit of a plan today. I wanted to recap on something that I have talked about probably a couple of times. Sort of.
There's a plan.
Yeah, somewhat. So I did mention something in a podcast way back about what was going on with Taylor Swift. I think the name of the episode, I remembered it because I titled it and I was proud of it. I called it Taylor Swift Pulls a Def Leppard, right? And so
for all of you who prefer that bands name themselves with proper English, especially British bands name themselves with proper English, the band should be called Hearing Impaired Jungle Cats.
Yes.
I'm just saying we're living in this century now, calling them Def Leppards. Let's say Hearing Impaired. Come on.
Yeah, seriously,
and
man.
Leopards, they're jungle cats, okay? Let's give them a little bit more than just having to call them such a slur as leopards.
I've just, never heard the term leopard as a slur before.
I was trying to justify my whole hearing impaired jungle cats thing. Come
understood,
on.
Understood. No, I like
how
it.
How many
I like
years
it.
Have
I think
been doing
worth,
that for?
How long have you been doing that?
I can say 21 years. I know Ooh. That. Mainly because I've never been a huge fan of Def Leppard. I mean, I'll listen to their music and whatever and sing along to the ones that I know, but like they're like the cheesiest arena rock band ever.
Oh, I know.
Like, we're
but...
talking the cheesiest of cheesiest.
Yeah.
Their songs are so formulaic. In many ways, they're the Nickelback of the 80s, but I forgive them because they're British and not Canadian. I have trouble forgiving the Canadians sometimes. They gave us Bryan Adams and Celine Dion. I'm sorry. I can't
understand that.
The thing is, I was never a big fan of Def Leppard. You hear them on the radio, whatever. I didn't own anything of theirs. I had no intention of. Never wanted to see them in concert. None of that stuff.
You know, I picked up a greatest hits record, and that was probably about it, if any of their stuff that I had. But that's because they had all the stuff that I liked. So,
well, I met my wife almost exactly 21 years ago. In fact, it's been a couple of days since it's been 21 years ago that we met.
Wow. Well, congratulations, sir. That is quite the milestone year, too.
Yeah, it's over half our lives, so.
Man.
I know. Man. I put up with her for that long. Can you believe it? Luckily, she doesn't listen to this, so I can say all of that. When I met her, I got a brand new infusion of music pumped into my brain. And I at that time, I was pretty set on the type of music I listened to, alt rock, you know, metal, that kind of stuff. Like, I would refer to it more as light metal, not necessarily heavy metal. I've come to the understanding that I really was never a fan of really heavy metal, because like the only metal band that I could be considered a true fan of is Metallica.
Right.
And then all the other ones that people think are these great metal bands, I'm like, no, they suck. No, I don't listen to them. They're okay, but I'm not going to listen to them. So, and then you like that band, we can't be friends anymore. Oh, you just kind of like that band now? I'm not sure I want to be friends with you. I guess we can be, but I'm never going to trust what you say about music again. Yes, that's for all you Pantera fans. Anyway, my wife is a it was then and is now an extremely eclectic music listener. And I broadened my taste as I got older and more comfortable in my skin and could be, you know, able to get past the whole guilty pleasure thing, because I don't have those when it comes to like music and movies and stuff like that anymore. I don't feel guilty about any of them. There was a time I did, but I don't anymore, because I'm totally fine saying that I love the things that I love. But yeah, she introduced me to a lot of things, and I'd be driving home from work with her in the car, and it would range anywhere from listening to Aerosmith and Def Leppard to it would change immediately over to Destiny's Child. For anybody that doesn't know who Destiny's Child is, that's listening, because maybe you might be too young. That's the band, or the group that Beyonce was in before she was Beyonce.
Yes.
That was basically like, you know, what would that be? Beta version, no, alpha version, whatever. The early version of Beyonce, whatever that would be called. And then she decided she didn't want to have other people singing with her and got rid of all of them and then became Beyonce. Even though she was doing 90% of the singing anyway. And so, yeah, that's my music selection during that time in my life was really freaky. And so to annoy her, I would, because I was annoyed having to listen to all this music that I barely deemed music. And, you know, she was my girlfriend at the time, so I was wanting to let her listen to her music, but I just couldn't let it be completely, because I'm an irritating person, so I have to irritate in some way, shape, or form. So I started calling Def Leppard Hearing Impaired Jungle Cats, because at the time it bothered her. It was annoying to her. And then there was a Destiny's Child song where I think the song may be titled even Say My Name. And that's the chorus, to be like, say my name,
yeah,
and a bunch of other stuff. And when that song would come on, I would start screaming at the radio, tell me what your name is, bitch. If you tell me your name, bitch, I'll tell you, I'll say your damn name, the whole chorus. And I would be screaming at the top of my lungs. To this day, when the song comes on, I'll be like, yo, what's your name? And my wife would be like, stop. You did that enough. She's okay now with the hearing impaired Jungle Cats thing. She finds that kind of cute and adorable. But we don't listen to Destiny's Child very much anymore, and I think I know why. I was at least able to get something changed. But anyway, I guess sorry.
I was going to say, wonderful planning, sir. That was very, very well done.
I do what I can. But anyway, so yes, Taylor Swift does a Def Leppard. Sorry. I want to make one final note. This has actually been the video or the podcast of ours on YouTube. YouTube's mm-hmm. where you should be listening to our podcast. Yes. Even though it's like a full video and you really don't see anything because it's just like wavy lines and stuff. I don't even think the lines actually match up to the audio, do they? Is it just pretty wavy lines?
They're pretty wavy lines. They get bigger when things get louder. They get smaller when things get quieter.
So they do kind of somewhat match up to the audio. Okay.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's actually the one of our podcasts that we have had any real comments on. We've never we had like one or two others where like one or two people have left a comment. Uh-huh. Like seriously, the whole time, over 2 years of stuff. That podcast has like 5 comments, maybe 6.
Woo!
Yeah, it's crazy.
Hit the big time there's that one. Well, perfect. See, they're gonna want to see this.
Yeah. There was a Def Leppard fan from I think Brazil. Who commented on it first?
Oh, yeah,
and then
yeah,
just
yeah.
Recently there was a Taylor Swift fan that commented on it.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, you still need to do a comment back to clarify some stuff.
Oh no. Yeah, yes, I will. No, I may have. Yeah, I'm not sure if I did. Okay. I'll have to double check that. And
because I know you commented on the Def Leppard guy. You made some comments to discuss it with the Def Leppard guy, but
yeah. If there's a single if it's a single comment, I can comment back. Maybe once we get to the part where we take a short break, during the break, let's look that up, and then I will answer it. I'll answer it in this episode. How about that?
Okay.
Sounds good.
I
like that.
I can, and then I can comment back for the person to check out the newest episode so that they can hear the answer to it.
Yes. But anyway, wonderful.
Yes, this has actually been that topic was basically our most popular one as far as getting some audience response back, because like there are people that listen, they just never respond to us. We want to hear from you people.
We do.
Anyway,
we do. So if it's something that piques your interest, especially, man, let us know.
And so you have follow-up information to this old podcast of ours.
Mm-hmm.
What's the information?
Okay, so the first part of the information, I will run another short, very compact preface to this. So essentially, the idea of the whole Def Leppard thing, let's talk about that. Back in like 2011, Def Leppard had a falling out with their label at the time, Universal Music, and over time, they had never actually negotiated the rights to their own masters. So they could never buy them back. But one of the things they negotiated was the ability
if they even still exist anymore. But that's another podcast.
That's another one. Yeah, because it was Universal that owned it.
Yeah, it's another podcast we did talking about what happened at Universal Fire. And the and the fire. You can check that one out, too.
Yep.
Anyway, okay. Moving on.
So with Def Leppard, what they did was they had negotiated a portion of their contract to state that anything done with their old masters cannot be performed by Universal without Def Leppard, the band's, express permission to do so. So they were trying to, if I remember correctly, I think they actually were trying to purchase their masters, or there was some kind of label-based thing that was going on about an album. I don't know what the details of it are, so it could be anything. But what was happening was the band and Universal Records were not happy with what was happening between the two of them in regards to this next album. So Def Leppard decided to quit their contract. They left. And during yeah, exactly. So they were like, you know what? We're just going to go find other business. We're going to move our way on. We're not with you guys anymore. We are ending our contract because we can do that. And then in the exit, in their resignation letter, they made the specific statement, do not bother asking us for the ability to use our masters in any degree at all. We will not allow you to do anything with them. And they cut it. Boom. Cut them off at the knees. Because it doesn't matter whether or not, like, anything that was previously done, sales, record sales, old record sales, former commercials, movies, any of that residual income that would come from those recordings. And I will talk about that in the next segment with the Taylor Swift part. Any of that residual income from stuff that happened previously, that's all previous stuff. Previous greatest hits records, previous albums. But any reissues, anything that's done with new commercials, they would have to go to Def Leppard based upon this clause in their contract. And Def Leppard said, nope. Shut the fuck up. Don't ever let us say anything. Don't say anything to us. We will not let you do that. And then what they decided to do, because they were taking, they were making a move to take their, to take a portion, a hefty portion of the rights of their music back. One thing that had not happened yet during this issue, during this fallout, was that Def Leppard had not yet been put on streaming platforms en masse. So they weren't on Spotify, they weren't on iTunes, they weren't on Google Play. They weren't really anywhere properly licensed for that kind of stuff. So when it came to that time, Def Leppard went, you know what? We're going to re-record our shit. So they took their biggest hits. I think they took like three or four of their songs and they re-recorded them in 2011 and 2012 so that they could then re-release the material as essentially, ideally, carbon copies of the original releases. Now, at the time, these guys are like in their 50s, you know, 50s, 60s, they're pulling their shit off, and they're doing stuff they're recording when they were like 21.
Yeah, and Joe Elliott does not quite have the ease of range that he used to.
He doesn't, but I will tell you.
Back in the old recordings, he got up there.
But get this shit. This is actually one of the things, because they have, now here's the thing. He is in very good shape, especially for a guy who's in his mid-50s at this time, okay? And the guy is like in his 60s right?
Especially for the level of partying that they did back in the day.
Oh, man, they fucked themselves up.
I am surprised that, like, they don't have all the venereal diseases. And the only reason I say that is because, like, literally, if do any research about Def Leppard back in the day, they were like, I can think of only one or two bands that were more disgusting when it came to the depraved sexual actions that these guys did.
Yeah.
I think Motley Crue being probably one of the other ones. Was it Crue or was it, I think it was Motley Crue that had the contest to see which one of them could go the longest without showering and still get laid.
And I don't know that one. Somebody
throwing up all over him.
I don't know that one.
Yeah, I think that ended with a groupie performing fellatio and throwing up all over the person.
Oh, God.
So I think it was Motley Crue, but it might have been Def Leppard. I'm not positive.
I don't know about... I do know the thing about Def Leppard, what they were doing at the time, was if you ever saw that concert footage, the in-the-round staging, footage that they had, like, from their big tours from, like, mid-'80s, like, 86, 87, you would notice they would all have breaks. Everybody would have a solo at one point. Like, Joe would come out with the acoustic guitar and do a couple of numbers, and then... you would have Phil come out and do this like nasty guitar solo for like 10-15 minutes or something like that. There was a drum solo that lasted.
That's two of them. Yeah, you got Joe and you got Phil. You got any more for me?
I can't remember the name of the drummer. But I want to.
Can you? Oh God, I want to make a joke and it's terrible. I want to make
what was it?
I'm not gonna make the joke. It's terrible. Can you remember half his name?
No, I can't.
You can't remember you can't remember half the drummer's name?
Okay. Half the drummer's name? No. I remember there was I remember a contest on the radio that I heard a long time ago. And people were trying to play which songs they were and they were speculating that they should hold a contest and play a specific song and see if the listener could tell whether or not it's one armed Def Leppard or two armed Def Leppard.
I mean, has to do with, I mean, were they using live tracks? Because otherwise that's just your knowledge of when the stuff was recorded.
Right. Exactly. Like, that was like Pyromania, so that means it was this year, which means, you know, like I have no idea which one.
Well, it's like if you're a Metallica fan, you know, Cliff or No Cliff. Well, that's easy. Because as long as you know which albums it's on. Now if you're listening to it live, it's a little harder. What you have to pay attention to live is how fast are they going?
Oh my God.
And how deep is James Hetfield's voice?
Oh, right. Yes. Voice, sorry. I thought we were still talking about Def Leppard for that. I was like, what?
No, not Def Leppard. No, I'm talking about the Metallica thing. Yeah. If James Hetfield's voice is deeper, then you know, it's probably true on the bass. If it's somewhere in between being high and deep, it might be Newstead. And if it's still like super high, then it's.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
Lots of jokes have been made about the drummer for Def Leppard, but this is a dude that I've seen a lot of different things where, you know, I've referenced my wife in the shows that she watches all the time. We're on another Grey's Anatomy run. And of course it's a medical show. So people get injured to the point of having to have prosthetics and, you know, amputations of things and whatnot. And then to add to that, I finally got her this week to watch most of, the new Marvel TV series on Disney Plus.
Oh, nice.
The Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
And, the Winter Soldier falls into this category as well. He's an amputee. Yeah. He gets a robotic arm, but he's still a damn amputee. And, the thing is, man, the Winter Soldier and the drummer from Def Leppard, those are the type of amputees I would like to be if I ever became an amputee. If I ever lost a limb, I want to be those two guys. Because, like, admittedly, okay, Bucky gets brainwashed, but even after Bucky's not brainwashed anymore, the Winter Soldier, even after he's not brainwashed anymore, he still puts on the robot arm and goes to fight when he needs to. He had retired in Wakanda. You know what I mean? He was just living off the land in Wakanda. He had got through all his mental stress and he was doing good. And, you know, the king shows up and king's all like, Wakanda forever. We got to go fight some aliens and stuff. And here's a new arm. And Bucky's like, all right, puts the new arm on, fights alongside a talking raccoon and shit. And, you know, whatever. He's a human.
He's a super soldier. Shit. I love it.
He's a super soldier with a gun and a robot arm. A vibranium robot arm fighting with a talking raccoon, and like that's he just does it, and it's kind of like all right, you know, this. I mean, even after all the brainwashing stuff is done, he could be done with war. Nope, he's gonna go and do it. Why? Because he's not gonna let losing his arm slow him down. Same thing. The drummer with Def Leppard. Drummer with Def Leppard is like horrific car accident. He loses his arm, and he's like, well, I'm still gonna be a drummer. And the band's like, do we need to get another drummer? And he's like, no, I'm gonna be a drummer still. okay, how? I got 2 feet. I'll make that work. And he did.
And he fucking did. He went and
made that shit work.
Yeah.
He could play all the old songs, albeit with some changes, and was still able to play new songs and keep going. And still in the band. Still playing. Playing better than some drummers that have two arms.
Yeah. So, absolutely.
I mean, the dude...
This guy fucking smokes. The dude is a hero. Yeah, absolutely. 100%. Like, it's crazy. You know what's really funny is I saw some back in the day footage from when they were like playing like Day on the Green and shit, like way fucking back in like 1983. And I didn't know that Def Leppard's drummer played traditional grip. Are you familiar with that? You know what that means?
Yeah, he puts the right hand stick between two fingers. And
yeah, and he plays it right, flicking. He used to play it flicking his wrist like a jazz drummer.
Yeah,
jazz. It's like, whoa. Mm-hmm. Like, and I always like, I personally am not a traditional grip player, but I like traditional grip players, the way that they play. There's just something about the way that traditional grip is done.
There's a little bit of a deafness to it, and there's a little bit of a you can be a little softer in the playing and a little more
there's dynamics.
Feels
to
more
it.
Alive.
Yes.
Yeah, it feels breathes. More alive in many ways. Yeah.
Yes. The anyway. Drums do what they call anyway. Yeah, the drums breathe, man.
Okay, let us get off track. I'm supposed to be keeping us on track.
Yes.
So Def Leppard re-records the songs.
Yeah, so here's
so
what
that they can be able to market them, and they don't have to give Universal the money to pay for their fire.
Yes. Boy, that was quick. Yes, technically speaking, you are absolutely correct. So technically, what's going on here is they re-record their songs. Now, the way that the, like I said, I'll talk about the music royalties and the way that they work a little bit in a very broad, like, I don't have a lot of depth, but I do know that there are things that shift drastically when an artist re-records their own shit. So a lot of the time, and you were talking at 2012, so, oh, this might have been a preparatory maneuver by her, because I learned something more recently in like the last like 15 minutes before we started, what had been going on and why what happened later is
we're still,
happening. And
we're still on Def Leppard, though.
We're still on Def Leppard, but basically what Def Leppard did was this shifts the amount of money that Universal holds. They still make some money, but they make a lot less than they would if it was the original recordings that they own. Like if somebody records
basically, I think I can give my understanding of it, which is a pretty basic understanding of it.
Uh-huh.
That's enough for people to kind of really grasp without too long of an explanation.
Uh-huh.
Original recordings, Universal owned like, well, I'm just going to throw out a random number of like maybe 30% of the pie. With money. It may have been more, but I'm just throwing out a random number here.
It is a much larger number, but yeah.
Let's say they owned 30% of the pie. That's because they owned not only a portion of the writing of the stuff, but also the actual master tapes. They have more ownership of it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas once it's re-recorded by the band, instead of owning the actual master tapes anymore, they only own a little bit of the writing part of it.
Yes.
That they originally owned. So they may only own about 7% of the pie instead of the full 30% anymore. And that's where the difference is. That extra 23% or so was the actual physical owning of the master recordings.
Yeah.
The whole idea of, you know, you own the thing if you have it in your hand. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
And that's kind of the difference. So the Universal still gets some money, but it's a lot less because it's not the full master of it.
Exactly. No, you pretty much hit it. So that is a major player in what is happening with Taylor Swift's stuff. And so I think this is a good spot for me to hold off. Now, basically, in retrospect, in a recap with Def Leppard, what they did, they choked off Universal from using their old recordings because it was a permission issue. And then what ended up happening was they re-recorded their own stuff and recorded relative carbon copy-esque versions and made those the only available songs for download on digital platforms. They didn't release physical. They just went, here's the only Def Leppard you can find on iTunes. They recorded the biggest hits. Re-recorded them, threw them up there, and then made most of the money from them because they were out of contract with Universal, and Universal only retained the songwriting royalties for those, which is great. So that is where it ends on Def Leppard's story. Now, after this, they did, I believe, now if you look up Def Leppard, you can find them on Spotify, you can find them on iTunes and all this kind of shit. iTunes is still a thing. I think Apple's just Apple Music now. But basically, they those original albums are back out. There has been a bit of a mending between Def Leppard and Universal Music with their own, you know, business.
Hey, buddy. Hey, guy.
Yeah,
hey,
pretty
buddy.
Yeah, pretty much that's it. So they're kind of back in business. I don't think Def Leppard, I think they're under their own label still, but they still have, you know, that negotiation. So the old stuff is there. I'm not even sure if the 2012 recordings are even still available. I know you can find them on YouTube if you really want to hear them. They do not sound exactly the same, but they sound pretty damn close, and they're a hell of a feat for a band that was 30 years removed from when they first recorded them. That is the part that is a mind fuck to me. How close they are for how old the band is. That's the real feat.
I mean, they're probably much better musicians now than they were 30 years ago.
Yeah.
So for all the musical components, that part's like, oh, okay, I really played it that slow back then. All right, I can do that again.
Or yeah, I can do that. Or it's more about its engineering work. It's finding out, okay, let's hear the stereo track. What drum machine are we using? What compressor are we using? What's the mics on the guitars? Like, what's the guitar amp? What is all of this stuff they have to recreate? Or come up with a reasonable facsimile that is so close. That is the depth of research that needs to be done.
No, that's just that. That's just producer talk. You just plug a guitar in and it works just fine. You don't know what you're talking about.
Of course not. No.
Seriously, you don't know what you're talking about. By the way, I just had a genius thought.
What?
I just had a genius thought. There needs to be a parody version of Pour Some Sugar on Me.
Oh God.
And it should be a song for vegans about eating broccoli. And it's Pour Some Salt on Trees. I'm just saying.
You know, you should get on that. You should do it.
No.
You should write it.
No.
No?
No. No, because I rank vegans up there with Canadians. Anyway.
Fair.
So this is a good spot to take a break because and this is coming back up because I'm gonna set the stage for the second half of this. This is coming back up to be talked about because Taylor Swift she just did something that brings this all back full circle to the original podcast and to what Def Leppard did back in 2012. So Mike will explain all of that when we come back in just a moment.
All right.
Hey friends, this is Mike from the Xennial Chronicles reminding you to subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can also follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Zenchron, spelled X-E-N-C-H-R-O-N, to keep up to date on all things TXC. And please check out our official website, thezennialchronicles.com, or if that's too much to type, zenchron.com. Thanks again for listening, and now, back to the show.
And we're back!
Okie dokie.
So, really?
Yeah.
That's what you're going to go with?
Yeah, I'm going with okie dokie. You know what? I'm not gonna make the best decisions every once in a while. All right.
I know you're still sometimes, my friend. What the heck is that about?
I know.
Anyway,
questionable
don't edit
decisions.
Any of this out.
No, of course
it
not.
It needs to stay in.
Okie dokie needs
I
to
love
stay.
These moments.
Okay.
Okie dokie. Okie dokie artichoke. Speaking of which, I'm having those for dinner tonight.
Ooh.
Yes, artichokes to go with sandwich night.
Nice.
Gotta have the sandwiches.
Yeah.
Love the sandwiches. Oh. No, I have to say this. I'm saying it here on the podcast.
What?
I have been gifted a beautiful dinner at some point or another in the near future.
Oh yes,
probably not next weekend because there's other things going on next weekend. But the weekend after, my father-in-law is going to be making chicken and dumplings for us.
Oh yeah,
and it is true. I've made my own chicken and dumplings, and I make them incorrectly because I put vegetables in them. He will be making true Southern chicken and dumplings, which means the ingredients are chicken and dumplings. And that's it. That's
all that's in fantastic. The chicken and dumplings.
Yeah, I'm going to enjoy them. You're not. So,
well, okay. Have a good time.
Be jealous.
I'm quite jealous.
But anyway, we're back here talking again about Taylor Swift.
Yes.
And what Taylor Swift did in this last week to kind of have her true Def Leppard moment, if you will.
Even more than that, dude. She took the Def Leppard thing and she blew it out of the fucking water. So to give you a to give a quick recap on what's going on. There's also a question, or not quite a question, but a comment on a previous video where we talked about this back near. What was it Thanksgiving last year? Was what it was?
Okay, yes, I was wrong when I identified it as the Taylor Swift and Def Leppard episode. That was the guy. That was the guy from Brazil that commented. This is actually the comments that came about Taylor Swift came on our Taylor Swift and Thanksgiving egg rolls episode. Ah. So that's another one that you can check out and think about the beauty and wonder that is Thanksgiving egg rolls.
Yes.
And
yes.
If you have questions about the Thanksgiving egg rolls, you can ask us on Facebook, on YouTube, all the various things that we talk about at the end of the episode.
Yes. Anyway, speaking of which, that's actually what this is about. So check this out. Actually, I just looked up how old this comment is. This comment's only a couple of weeks old, which is really cool.
Yes.
Yes, so,
it's only 2 weeks old.
Yeah. So specifically to Jess Swifty, who commented on this, thank you so much. And we're replying here instead of just in a comment thread because I think it would be, I think it's cool. And we really appreciate the listening. Like, we really do. So, okay. So,
yes, very thankful.
We're going to read this all off, real quick on one of the comments that she made, in regards to Taylor Swift and her contract negotiation. Now, I do not have any of this information. I'm sure some of it is public. I have not done all the research on this, so I will disclaim this. I do not know if this is the case, but I don't see any reason why it wouldn't be. To be completely honest, especially as long as she's been in the game and doing her thing. And as young as she started, she's going to learn a lot of shit and learn how to do a lot of things the right way real fucking fast. So I completely concur with this comment here. Jess says, I think she has the recording rights and songwriting rights to her own music because she writes her songs. She can, one of the things that she can do due to her contract, she can refuse to have the songs played in commercials or shows. Very similar to Def Leppard's, very similar to Def Leppard's contract negotiation. Very similarly, yes. She said she has rejected a lot of requests for Shake It Off to be played in commercials. So if someone wants to use her music for ads and movies, they need both Taylor Swift and Shamrock's approval. Now, I'm not familiar with Shamrock, who Shamrock is. I don't know if they're a label or if they are another person.
Yes, it is. This is actually something that was discussed in that episode, in the egg roll episode.
Oh, okay. It's been a while since I went back and listened to it, and I'm a bit removed from the information, so I do apologize for not remembering this stuff.
Continue on. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I apologize for not remembering. Who is Shamrock again? I apologize.
Shamrock's Holdings. Yes. Oh, yes, we did talk about this.
Okay, Shamrock Holdings. Yes.
Disney.
Yes, they're the guys owned by Disney. Ithaca is part of that too, if I remember correctly.
Yes.
It's Ithaca Holdings LLC. I think they may own Shamrock Holdings, or basically, this is a subsidiary of Disney, as far as I know, or I may be entirely mistaken, but essentially, Shamrock and Ithaca own the rights to her current music, or to those albums now. And because of the contract that she had made with Big Machine Records back in the day, or in had fact, negotiated in. Fact,
As my memory's coming back, that episode, the Taylor Swift and the egg roll episode, was about the fact that Scooter Braun finally sold off all of these rights to Shamrock. That was the
that's
big
what
thing
it
that
was.
Happened
okay,
at that point.
That's right. Okay, so I believe Ithaca Holdings or Shamrock.
There's still been a lot of stuff that's happened to both of us.
Yes.
Since that Thanksgiving episode, and because it's you know, these last 2 years have been just crazy, and it keeps going crazy.
Okay, I just got a clarification on this. So here's what goes on. I apologize for the muddiness here in a minute. So here's what happened. Scooter Braun owns Ithaca Holdings. He's a celebrity manager. Ah. He doesn't manage celebrities. He is a manager who is a celebrity. Now, he's got a big name in the music business in general. He owns Ithaca Holdings. Okay, he purchased Big Machine Label Group, like purchased their catalog entirely and all of it. He purchased Big Machine Label Group, the actual label, and all of its recorded music assets, which included Taylor Swift's first six albums. This included material that she partially wrote and material that she exclusively wrote herself. Okay. First six albums.
This was the information.
All of them. Yeah.
Yes, this is the information that was that we discussed in the again in the original Taylor Swift and Def Leppard podcast.
Yes. Now, Taylor Swift and Scooter. Yes, Taylor Swift and Scooter Braun do not like each other. Okay, and one of the things that Scooter Braun had said, he tried to strike a deal with Taylor Swift that said, "You do an album for Ithaca, and we will give you the rights to one of your albums. And she basically gave them a big fuck you and decided to say, you know what, I'm just going to record my shit. And the reason why she can do that is because she negotiated that one part of her contract, from what I have seen, or it's speculative in a more recent occurrence. It's apparently speculative as of November on Variety, on Variety's website, that there is a clause that is in her contract that allows her to record her music more than once, which would make sense because, and I might be muddying this up, but speculatively speaking, think about it this way. If you're restricted from recording music after you've created it, things like live albums are very difficult to make and there are a lot of hoops to jump through. But if she is a working star and she is constantly moving and constantly making stuff happen, then one of the things that she needs to do is have a simpler capability to set herself up. Now, when you leave a contract, you are not tied or bound to each other, but certain parts of your contract do still hold true. Like, if it is stated that you as an artist cannot record your own material again, and it's put in that in the contract, there is some shit that's put in contracts. I've heard of whole bands that have been ordered not to reform unless for a certain amount of years after the contract ends. Whole, like, bands that sounded like they were fucking fire when they came out, and they're not allowed to get back together with the musicians they played as, or with the musicians they played with, or in that group for like 20 years. And it's negotiated within the contract because it's put there by the label or whoever, and they agree to that. Now, one of the things that did happen with Taylor was that possibility of not being able to record her music because of the worth of the original recording was either negotiated out or it was just nullified entirely. Maybe during the negotiations somehow, or the initial negotiations, somehow it is not there. This is a big deal and why something just happened. Now, Scooter Braun, who owned Ithaca Holdings, bought Big Machine, Taylor Swift's former label, starts offering shit like a douchebag. She says, fuck you. Okay? She decides to move forward and go, you know what? I'm re-recording my own shit because it's in my contract that I can. One of the things that Jess Swifty did clarify, her former manager was Scott Borchetta, who was the owner of Big Machine Records.
Before it was bought by
Scooter Braun. Now, she didn't like Scooter Braun, and they had a falling out of some... Taylor didn't like Scooter Braun, and they had a falling out in some capacity. They don't get along, and Scooter Braun doesn't have the best reputation. So that's what it is. They don't like each other. So this ends up becoming a little bit more convoluted. Now, Taylor Swift, maybe she was inspired by them, maybe she learned about this, because around a certain time period, I believe Taylor Swift actually was on CMT's Crossroads with Def Leppard at one point. They performed together and did like each other's songs and duets and shit, and it was great, right? Way back in the day. And she may have learned one or two. Maybe she's kept in contact. I would, if I was a working musician working with people of that caliber, I'd call up Joe Elliott on the phone and be like, hey, Joe, you guys did something like this at one point. What was that about? Maybe I can do something. Is that something I can do? And they would go back and forth, maybe. But basically, she learned that she had the capability of re-recording her shit. And the way that this works in a legal money sense is that Big Machine may own those recordings, those original master recordings, and anything in the songwriting royalties, quote unquote. She may even own the songwriting royalties, but the original master recordings, the majority of the money that's made from those recordings being, you know, licensed out for whatever, if that is ever done. Again, this is apparently a very big deal with her having to write express permission for licensing to go out. That's a big deal. Okay. So if Scooter Braun sells, oh yeah, that's right, that was another thing that happened. I apologize. I skipped that entirely. So,
well, no, actually, here's the thing. All this information that you're doing right now is all the stuff that was covered in the other two, episodes. And I can do, if I may, do a brief synopsis.
Yeah.
Basically, Taylor learns from Def Leppard and what Def Leppard did. Taylor decides that she's going to try to re-record her own stuff, but she's still trying to get the rights and still trying to buy them from Scooter Braun. And in November of last year, which is when we recorded the one with Taylor Swift and the egg rolls, in November of last year, Scooter Braun sells these six albums along with a bunch of other stuff to Shamrock Holdings. And Shamrock is like, yeah, they're ours. We're not gonna help you out with this, Taylor.
Well, okay. And so let's actually Shamrock Holdings. That's not necessarily true. So what ends up happening is Taylor, when her contract wears out, she actually has the money and she tries to get a hold of Big Machine. She's like, I've got the cash. Let me buy my masters. Our contract is out and I'm with Universal. I want to buy my shit. They crickets. Okay. Then Scooter Braun and Ithaca Holdings buys Big Machine. Okay. That label shit goes back and forth. Hey, if you record one for us, we'll give you one, blah, blah, blah. That shit is a complete disaster and a full falling out, okay? Then what happens is Taylor, while she's waiting with money in hand, is trying to figure out what to do, but it's Scooter Braun that owns the shit, so it's trapped. Those rights are trapped with him, and he's basically got a one-up on her. So eventually what happens is she's like, you know what, man? If nothing happens, I might just record this stuff on my own. And she starts talking about it. Fans get like super excited about it, okay? Because this is some serious power move kind of shit. What ends up happening is Scooter Braun, under her nose, while still holding the rights to her records, and Big Machine completely sells it to, why am I missing that name?
Shamrock.
Shamrock, thank you. Sells yes. Big Machine's rights and Taylor Swift's records to Shamrock for like $300 million or some crazy ass number.
It's $300 million, and I mean, that's basically what I said. You're just adding, again, the more flavor that we did into other podcasts that they could also go listen to.
Yes, they could.
that's the thing. So the thing is, this is all the backstory of what happened. This is what we've talked about before. But the thing that happened last week
was Taylor's
first real response to this.
Yes, Taylor's first actual response to this is... Well,
other than like she's I'm not going to say that she's not been in the news cycles because she has. She's been in the news cycle. She's done interviews about it. She's talked about it.
Oh, yeah. This has been on her sleeve. She has tattooed this on her forehead. Everyone knows that this is happening.
But
right?
what happened last week was the actual real action of, you know, I said I was going to find a way around this. Here's the way. And that's what happened last week.
Okay, so basically, while we were talking about, we had the podcast, was it last week or week before, we were talking about DMX. When DMX passed, another major thing happened pertaining to Taylor Swift. She dropped her first fully re-recorded album. It's called the Taylor's Version. It's called Taylor's Version of the album Fearless. So the album Fearless, which dropped when she was like 18 years old, right? And I think it's got Love Story in it.
You're the Taylor Swift fan, man.
I'm sorry?
You're the Taylor Swift fan between us. So.
That's the one that's got Love Story in it. I actually, you know, just to be real about it, just to make sure, I actually A-B'd these two mixes. I listened to both of them. Like, I loaded them both up, and I had to listen to them. And you will not fucking believe how dead on this sounds. I knew it, and I called it back in the day. Dude, when she does this... It's going to be as perfect can be. It does. And when I said it blows away the fucking Def Leppard stuff, no discredit to Def Leppard. What they did in their 50s is fantastic. But what she pulled off at like 30, dude, no, it's untouchably accurate. The panning is the same. The mix is practically the same. And what she did was literally recreate the deluxe edition of the album that she came out with. I think there might be some differences, some extra stuff. It's like 27 songs on two discs.
There's actually a few differences in a few of the songs reported by Taylor Swift herself.
Oh, that she made
a few different artistic choices in a few songs. But I find amusing. This is just for people listening to get an understanding of the character of, you know, Mike and myself.
Yeah.
When when I bring a topic forward as the topic I want to talk about for the podcast, I do all kinds of internet research. I have a bunch of these different articles. I got all kinds of information. I got little scraps of notes that help to jog my memory, and I've read a whole bunch of stuff. So I try to have details. And if I don't have them written down, I have devices around me with the websites up so that I can read through the exact details and get the exact details. Mike has said a couple of times on here, he didn't do all the research on that, But Mike, the guy who does music production, who's gone to school for music production, the musician, the true musician between the two of us. I mean, I play instruments, but I'm not a musician. This is the guy that his research, his true deep research consisted of listening to both the tracks, one in each ear at the same time to see what the difference.
Well,
were.
No, I didn't do that.
Regardless, he listened to both. He listened to the tracks to flat out see the differences. That's his level of research. It's just it shows you what kind of the focuses are. His is really the music, and this is an important focus. I'm not saying anything you should take in any bad way. This is an important focus to you. This is about the accuracy of the music. And
yes.
I think we even said in the previous podcast, you even said that if she does it quick enough, she's still going to retain the vocal capabilities and probably even sing it better than what she did then. But I read one article about this where she said she tried to get as much of the same vocal inflection as possible and vocal style as possible.
Yeah.
Just a few minor artistic changes that she even thought of doing back then. She said, she claims, can't, you'll take that for what it is.
Beautiful.
But wasn't ready to do that at that point in her career, do some of the artistic changes. They're very minor. But yes, from all I've heard about it, it's pretty hard to distinguish between the two. And if it's distinguished in any way, it may actually be her version of it may be better. That's everything I've heard at this point.
To be completely honest, I think it is absolutely worth it to consider the possibility that this is the case. She basically took an entire album that came out 12 years ago? And she did a Zack Snyder's Justice League cut of her own album. That is that's the best metaphor that I could possibly use to describe what she did.
I don't think that's a good metaphor, only because this album is just, it's just showing why she should have had a career launched in the beginning, and that she's at that level and above that level. Mm-hmm. The Zack Snyder version of Justice League hopefully completely and utterly tanked Joss Whedon's career, because he almost completely, if not completely, tanked the DC live action universe with that crap show of a movie. So that's I don't see the comparison whatsoever.
Okay, I can and describe that, but please continue real quick, and then I'll respond.
I'm gonna do one of my taking a stand moments here. Anybody that wants to try to believe that the Joss Whedon version of the Justice League is better than the Zack Snyder cut of the Justice League, I don't have time to waste on you. Don't talk to me. Because it's not better. You're just wrong. That's one
fantastic
of those moments where we cannot agree to disagree. You are just wrong. Joss Whedon's version butchered the movie.
Yeah.
And the Justice League version is, yes, Zack Snyder could have toned down the slow motion a little bit, but it's Zack Snyder. He never tones down the slow motion.
That's like asking J.J. Abrams not to do fucking lens flare. Like...
Or asking Michael Bay not to put an American flag and do a low angle wraparound shot in one of his movies,
or make something explode. Yeah, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, it's not. He could. Michael Bay could be doing a movie about cavemen, and something would freaking explode, and there'd be an American flag somewhere.
Yeah,
that shit would happen. It's just. There wouldn't even need to be an explanation for it.
That would be fucking hilarious cavemen. To see a movie remake, Michael Bay's Caveman.
Yeah, you see two cavemen, like, they're crawling up along the edge of a cliff hunting woolly mammoth and shit. And, like, one guy looks at the other one, and as you get his point of view, the guy, his friend Hunter that he's looking at, he's got this just waving American flag behind him. And they come down the cliff.
Like,
and
he's standing there real quick. When I hear that, he's just standing there, he's looking at him, he's like, what? Like, for no reason at all.
And well, you wouldn't say what, because they like speak caveman. So like, ugh.
Yeah.
Ready, ready, gang. and then they go hunt the mammoth, right? And
yeah.
And they kill the mammoth, and like as they like do some kind of weird thing, and the way they kill the mammoth is they throw a spear at the mammoth, and like half the mammoth explodes, and then they they duck and take cover as chunks of mammoth fly everywhere.
Yeah.
And as they're standing up from the duck and cover, you know, they're obviously right next to each other. They stand up, and you get that low angled shot that like spins around them, the bad boy shot.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And that's,
yes.
That's, yeah.
Yeah. No, that's one. God, if I had my hands on a film crew, I would parody the living piss out of that.
That would be fine. I just want credit for that.
Yeah. No, you're going to be right there. You're going to be directing it. What are you talking about?
All right. Well, then if I'm going to be directing, I'm going to Orson Welles that shit. I'm going to direct it. I'm going to write it, and I'm going to act it. I want to be I want to be one of the damn cavemen. I want my shot.
Do it, man. Do
I
it.
I want that low angle shot. Plus, like I'm hairy enough, I could totally play a caveman. But anyway,
okay. Let me go back to respond. I wanted to respond to this. Like, I don't want to take too far away from it. So what I stated as far as the Zack Snyder's Justice League version, the reason why I state that is because this is the first time it's not the first time in film history that it's ever happened. Like, independent films do this kind of shit all the time. But when you're looking at an involvement for a major big blockbuster budget type film, okay, there is a large hand that is always put into the pot and is making major decisions that is the film company that's behind it. Such is the same deal when it comes down to a record company. They're choosing their producer. They're choosing what kind of money you make. They're choosing how many copies are made. They're choosing where it's sold. They're choosing everything because they're the money. They're what is their money makes decisions, man. So when it comes down to artistic interpretation or freedom of expression as an artist for her and a songwriter, a lot of the times that is that level of trust can sway back and forth a bit. And there is a lot of stuff that, like you said earlier, that she had stated that she wanted to make certain artistic decisions that she was not allowed to make at that time. Well, now she's got the opportunity to do that. And this is why when you look at Zack Snyder's Justice League as a title, that was his version of the film. This is what he wanted to go out. And this is why that album title is called Fearless Taylor's Version. The fact that it is a response to shit business and a terrible decision. Now, it's not a terrible decision when it comes down to the basis of money, but it is a terrible decision when it comes down to the basis of artistic integrity. And just, it's literally people doing stuff just to piss each other off. But that's not the point of the album itself. This became far deeper than that. She showed what an artist is capable of doing at any point in time in their lives, when they are able to negotiate their rights as an artist. And the fact, first off, I am going to give full credit to the fact that, I mean, aside from Ray Charles negotiating the rights to his own masters in his record contract, this is one of the biggest decisions behind, like, this is Michael Jackson with the Thriller video on MTV big. Or was it Thriller or Bad? I think it was one of the two. Like, there was this lack of, I think, black representation on MTV, and Michael Jackson himself was one of the catalysts for making sure that black music was more represented on MTV. This is Taylor Swift making a decision in the name of artists everywhere, but especially the fact that it's a female artist that does this, that does something like this, is a humongous step forward in the right direction when it comes down to artist rights in general. And I give full credit to her completely for being a bad bitch and being able to make this happen.
In the good sense, by the way, not in the bad sense.
Yeah. Yes.
Let's make sure the good, yeah,
I'm positive that that is, I'm positive that, that is portrayed properly. I am like, okay, so happy. This is a step in the right direction for artist rights, man. You're going to see now for overall, because of this contract negotiation shit, you're going to see that's a two-step process now when it comes down to contract negotiations for artists versus labels when it comes down to this. You're going to have artists adding clauses that allow themselves to record their own material after a contract ends, or retaining the rights to their masters, because that's been negotiated away for decades. You've got record labels coming up with something called a 360 deal, which is when they make money off of touring and merchandise and that kind of work outside of album recording, and then turning around and making the majority of money when it's shit pay from streaming services, because it's completely not the same negotiation that was done with radio and television and film.
Yeah.
That has been a huge deal for 10 years, and it is a move that, like this, that allows artists to keep and retain their rights for when they no longer need those labels. And what is it? A decision that the label is not the most powerful thing in music. They were for a very long time. If you couldn't get on a label, you were incapable of being famous or doing anything for yourself. But I know plenty of self-made artists that have existed now for the last decade with a career on fucking YouTube, where they write their own shit, or they do their own interpretation of something, and it makes it's not like making a huge amount of money, but it is earning them a spot in the public eye.
It's also giving them the ability to share their art. I mean,
yeah,
damn, any two idiots can record a podcast and put that shit up on YouTube. You know,
I'm just saying, man, I am super excited for artists everywhere right now seeing a maneuver like this, and I'm fucking proud of her for doing something like this.
I mean, the only thing that would have made it better for me if it was Dolly Parton, because I just love that woman. But like, all right. Tay Tay, you get it too. My daughter's a fan of some Taylor Swift songs. So
hell yeah.
Which is funny. I've probably listened to more Taylor Swift songs than you. Well, rephrase. I've listened to the same songs more times than you have. Because there's like three of them that she really likes, and I've listened to those a whole bunch. But you know, whatever.
I understand entirely, man.
I'm not going to say that I dance to it. I do. But
hey, it's catchy shit. Come on, let's be real.
The Trouble song is great, especially the goat version, but just the Trouble song itself, I actually like that song. I'm a total sucker for that. That electronic drum beat shit, I'm a total sucker for that.
I just like the
you throw that in there and it's like, and then the wah, you know, that kind of sound thing. I love that stuff. It's like it's almost like
Have you ever read the lyrics to Blank Space?
No.
Read them. They're way better than you think they are. Like, they're really good. That's good lyrical content, man.
I do think they're good lyrics. There's a few of her songs that got overplayed that I didn't like listening to, just because like you hear them all the time and it's like, I hear that again. Like some songs do that to you. Like there's some songs you can hear like forever, like Africa. You can hear that song forever and it doesn't matter. Unless nobody knows
what they're singing about in the song Africa either. Like nobody knows the lyrics to Africa.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah. No, I hear the drums echoing the night and nobody knows. They don't even know what the words of the chorus are.
No, I don't know what the words of the chorus are.
Nobody knows, but that song sounds fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know where to go from here, man. Like, I'm just saying.
Something about dragging people away in 100 men or more or something like that. And then, something about Africa and you're either missing the rains or blessing the rains. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't care. It's a cool song, and even like most covers of it are pretty decent.
When they're done right, yes. I've heard bad ones, but when they're done right, I like them.
Like I say, most covers of it, most, not all.
Most.
But no, this is last week when sadly when DMX died, this is when Taylor Swift decided to put this album out. I mean, I'm not wishing death on anybody, but it would have been very ironic if it had not been DMX that had died on that day. If it had been something that had happened to Kanye on that day, that would have been really ironic.
Oh man!
For the album to come out at that point in time. Although, from what little news I understand, Kanye, I think his wife might be leaving him. So, and then he's been engaged in some very clandestine activities with various other celebrities that he would not be necessarily pleased to have been caught being engaged in those activities with.
Oh,
but that's a story for another day that I really don't want to talk about because I don't like Kanye. So
I've never heard this stuff. I'm gonna have to find out what you're talking about, man. I don't know.
I heard him do a cover of at one of his concerts. He did a cover of Bohemian Rhapsody that was so terrible. If you tried to do that at like a karaoke night or something, I would have forcibly removed him from the bar and lost my shoe in his anus. So, yeah, I just never been a fan of his.
But anyway,
this is good for Taylor to have made this first real. I mean, she said she was going to do it. She did it by putting the album out, and that's kind of. It's interesting that this is one of those things that we've talked about multiple times, and we're seeing the fruition of it finally, and hope for the next five albums, because it was six albums total that Shamrock now owns the stuff for.
Yeah,
let's wait for the next five albums to come out and have her prove that point that artists should have the rights to the things that they create. Now, no, you don't have the right to a chord structure because that's been around forever. But you should, what you do with that chord structure and what you add to it and the flavor that you give it, that should be yours.
Yeah.
And you should be able to have control over it. And if money's to be made off it, you should be making the money off of it.
Yeah.
Not some suits sitting in an office somewhere. That's about for everything though. If you're doing the work, you should be able to be making the money off of it and not enriching some fat cat sitting in an office.
Yep.
But
absolutely.
You know, hey, I've been called a commie before, so whatever that means. Anyway, Mike, where can our hopefully our new listener that since we talked about her? Oh no, my phone!
Oh no,
it did it. That's great. Keep it on there. Hopefully Jesse gets a chance to listen to this. Maybe there's some way for you to. I don't know, reference the when you upload all this stuff and do the smart stuff that you do that I don't know how to do, which is why I have you along. Maybe get a way to let her know that this came out and we mentioned her in it or something. Reference the original video, whatever. But one, again, thanks for listening. But two, hopefully this gave a little more information. Hopefully she likes hearing about it. We are excited for what Taylor brings as far as sticking it to the man, because you know, damn the man, right?
Damn the man, that's right.
Save the empire. Anyway,
but yeah.
And if you don't know what that reference is, why are you listening to us? We shouldn't be friends,
dude.
Anyway,
come on now.
Where are people listening to us, Mike?
Well, you could be listening to us on our website, thezenialchronicles.com or zencron.com. Speaking of Zencron, you can follow us also on our other platforms. We're on Twitter. We are on Facebook, and we're also on YouTube as well. But if you're looking at the podcast itself, you can listen to us on most of our major podcast platforms. Like, you know, we're on Spotify, we're on Google Podcast, we're on Apple, all that kind of stuff. But TuneIn, yes,
tune
yes,
TuneIn, yeah.
TuneIn as well, exactly. So, I mentioned YouTube earlier. You can be listening to us on YouTube, like our friend Jess was listening to us on YouTube and left a comment. Please leave a comment, by the way.
Are we okay to call her our friend at this point? She's just a person that commented one time. We'd like for her to be our friend.
Well, she commented a few times and she was very, very nice.
I said something and then she said something back. She said she enjoyed our conversation, which was like awesome.
She did. That was great.
I don't know if that meant like I don't know if that meant like her and my conversation or like you're in my conversation, but it doesn't matter because it felt good to me no matter what. I was like, woohoo, somebody likes us. Other than our extremely dedicated listener, who has at least comments to me regularly and listens to all of our stuff. We appreciate you. You know who you are. I won't name drop you. All I'll say is in reference to a conversation we had earlier today. I hope you enjoy your episode of Dr. Pooh and the Turtis. I'll explain that one to you later, Mike. But as Mike was saying, YouTube, you can find us on YouTube. That's where Jess found us. That's the best place to find us. How many of our videos can they find on YouTube? How many of our podcasts?
All of them. I don't even know how many we have. What episode are we on? We are like, what, over?
I think it's like 90 now. 90.
Oh, no, we're over 100. We're over 100
really,
episodes.
That many?
Yeah, we broke 100.
We would have been.
Yeah, I think we're like 105, I think, or something like that. Like, yeah, we're up there, man. We're up there. It's pretty awesome.
Cool.
Yeah, so anyways, guys, Check us out on YouTube. If you like, if you're listening to us on YouTube or watching the little bar scroll across the waveform, make sure that you drop a like on the video and make sure that you subscribe to us as well if you haven't already. And there's one more thing to do, James. What was that?
You said like, right?
Yeah, I said like the video.
Like, because we like it when you like it.
Yes. Yes, I did say to like the video.
You said to subscribe, right?
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
And just so you know, it doesn't cost you anything like those magazine subscriptions that like college kids tried to sell you back in like the 90s and stuff. It doesn't cost anything to subscribe. You can subscribe for free. It's okay.
Yeah.
We're not asking for your money.
No, not at all.
Like, subscribe. Oh, I remember Quasimodo that shit.
Oh, God. What he means is...
click the bell.
Yes, click the bell. Make sure that you hit that bell so you get notified the next podcast we put out or the next video we put out. If it's not a podcast, I don't know. We like to toss it up every once in a while when something happens and we can't podcast. We put out a video instead. And this is a place that we do it on YouTube. So thank you guys so much. And yeah.
I just want to say, hey, you broke in. I was going to say Mike likes to toss it up if it's salad.
Oh. Thanks.
Sorry, I had to.
I know.
I was in a Jay and Silent Bob state of mind right at that moment, okay?
Understood, anyway. Understood.
Like he said, thank you for listening, and we'll be back again next week?
Yeah.
Next week.
Y'all have a good one.
Thank you for tuning in, friends. The journey continues next week.